Hi, this is Robbie from Animation Station. Welcome to episode 20, in which we review Paranorman. Enjoy, guys.
Hello!
Hello!
I'm Trent, I'm Robbie.
You're not Tracy.
Aren't I?
I'm Robbie, and this is Racy. Portmanteaus. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode
20-something.
13-something. 20-something. It's probably 20, at this point.
Yeah, kind of.
Realistically? We're on the road, in case you can't tell.
Yeah, we're on the road again for this one.
And I'm going to be a responsible driver and not hold my phone while we record. The first one.
That's fine.
Anyway, hello.
Yeah, so this is kind of episode 20, because I don't know if we want to count our Christmas episode is an episode number, but we're not.
I think that it counts. It's considered 19, right?
So then we're on.
Was it 19 or 18?
It would be 20.
Is it?
So this is 21 then.
Ooh, okay.
We need to figure out our numbering system.
20 whatever. Like, okay, we can legally drink. Welcome to episode 21. But we can die for our country, but we can't have a beer. No, that's 18. We're 21, and we are loving it. That was so unnecessarily camp. I'm sorry. I apologize for that. Anyway, episode 21 of Animation Station. We are back recording about Paranorman.
Yes.
Yeah, we are excited about this. We actually got we got baby's first request. We had a very nice fan on Twitter. I don't remember her name.
Angela Entsminger.
Okay. Right, so we had a very, very lovely, very nice Twitter follower contacted us and asked, like, hey, can you review two films? And one of them was Paranorman. The other is our next episode, Fantastic Planet.
Yes.
But we love the idea so much, we're just like, absolutely. So here we are.
Yes.
Yep. So I'll do a very brief little synopsis about the movie in case you haven't seen it.
Yes.
The movie is produced by Laika, which is an animation house in Oregon. It's a stop-motion animation. It was made in, I think, 2012? Something like that? 2012 or 13? I forget, but all I remember is that it came out in August. Like, I think it had the same issue that Hocus Pocus did, because that got released in, like, July of 1993, and it's very clearly a Halloween movie. And, like, they both did fine, but if they had released them a little bit closer to, like, October, because they're obviously kind of Halloween campy sort of movies, they would have done a lot better. But it was released in August of 2012, I believe, and it follows the story of Norman Babcock, who is a young boy that lives in Blythe Hollow, a kind of parody satire of Salem, Massachusetts, and follows his adventure finding out the history about the witch that was buried and haunts Blythe Hollow. anyway, it follows the story of Norman Babcock, who I think he's, 12?
Yeah, 12 or 13.
12 or 13, like a kind of like a preteen, who lives in Blythe Hollow, which is a parody of Salem, Massachusetts, investigating the story of the Witch of Blythe Hollow, which is a parody of the Salem witch trials that's been haunting the town for a while now, and just kind of goes about terrorizing things, causing destruction, and finds out about it from his uncle, Prendergast, who's played by John Goodman, of all people.
Yes.
John Goodman kind of looking like a drifter with, what are those things called? You know, like, those weird, like, rubber, like, pad thingies?
Yes.
Yeah, like those pushroom dealies? Like, that's what his beard looks like.
It's made of.
Anyway, everyone chalks him up to being crazy. Norman's considered a freak because he can see and talk to ghosts. And he's, kind of shunned and isolated socially. He befriends a young boy named Neil, who he's also kind of an outcast because he's chubby. But they strike up a friendship and end up learning more about the town after doing this, like, really terrible school pageant. And Norman starts having visions about what happened to the ghost of that now haunts Blythe Hollow. On the way, he goes with his older sister Courtney, Neil's older brother Mitch, and they have a Scooby-Doo-ish kind of adventure. Oh, and Alvin, the bully, who looks who's voiced by Christopher Mintz-Plasse, who was McLovin in Superbad. Which is really funny to see him as a bully, because if you know what he looks like in real life, it's kind of ridiculous. But, yeah, they investigate the ghosts and kind of explore the town. They're trying to figure out what her motivation is, like, why she's terrorizing the town. And it's, we find out that apparently she was this other 12-year-old girl who also had, like, mystical powers or presumably could talk to ghosts. Mm-hmm. And she was straight up killed by a bunch of Puritans.
Right, she was executed.
Yeah, when she was just but a wee little child, and, she's been haunting and terrorizing the town ever since because her ghost is on, her spirit's been unrest, and Norman decides to, as opposed to just, like, fighting or killing anything, like, the zombies that rise up from the Puritans after he goes into the forest and recites this incantation, he tries to kind of, like, team up with them, or at least try to figure out where she's buried and go talk to her that nobody else ever did.
Right.
Yeah, it's in a very kind of, like, At the start, very scary exchange, but very well done.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's this incredibly vivid animation of her ghost is being made of lightning, and, like, just suspended animation, and she can manipulate land and tear this tree out. So it's... eventually, they kind of, like, reach an understanding wherein Aggie is her name, like, Agatha. Like, this is... Mm-hmm. We probably should have mentioned spoilers earlier, but whatever. It's a review. It's gonna happen.
It's not all that's happened to us.
Yeah, basically. So, Agatha's ghost was... Or Aggie's ghost was, acting up more or less because she missed her mom. Like, she was taken away from her. She was, like, kind of, like, locked up and then killed for being different. And she's never been able to kind of cope with that. And she just sort of... All of her freaks out are very kind of childish, like, kind of like tantrums. Because she's just at that sort of stage of not being fully mature enough to know how to handle her emotions. And they have a heart-to-heart about it, and Norman hears her out, and she's like, well, there's a really good quote that's about, well, don't you want the people who hurt you to make them suffer? And he's like, well, yeah, but what would that do? Which is, I don't know, it's...
it's sort of part of the message of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, where it's like a lot of the origin of the film, or like the main crux of the film, is just a message against bullying. And given the time that this came out, that was super surprising. Because I think that movie Bully came out around like 2011 through 2012, something like that. And but yeah, is there anything else that I left out? You can chime in.
Yeah. So there were kind of two. We kind of glossed over it, but Patrice kind of glossed over it. But there's kind of two, like, there's kind of a couple turns in this movie that. Like, if you remember when it was coming out, you knew it was going to be zombies, but you didn't know about the witch.
Yeah.
And that's because that's, like, sort of the big turn is, like, Aggie had cursed these Puritans, and they were going to come up from the ground as zombies every year at the, whatever the date was.
Yeah,
right?
It was the anniversary of the witch's death,
right,
which coincides with them doing the play.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So... the zombies come up, and, you know, everyone's terrified of the zombies, and then there's two turns that happen. One, where the zombies are conscious enough to look around at the world around them and realize just how mind-blowing it would be as a Puritan being in modern-day society, period. But then the other turn is you realize that these zombies aren't interested in causing harm. They actually want to do something about this problem.
But there's only kind of so much that they can do. They sort of need Norman to be the catalyst.
Right, exactly. Norman, I would argue, is like a medium.
Yeah.
Because he literally speaks with spirits.
And he traverses both the spirit world and the human world because, like, he can talk to ghosts. Like, he's like friends. He regularly greets and is friendly to, like, all the ghosts in the town.
Right.
And everyone looks down on him where, like, they think he's a freak or anything. But he's not, like, a shy or a weird kid or anything. It's just, like, he... is more comfortable talking with the ghosts.
Well, yeah.
Because they're not going to judge him. Like,
right.
I'm sure they're glad to just talk to somebody. His grandma lives in their house.
Yes. And there's actually a great turn. There's a great literal turn in the movie. So when he's walking to school, they do this outstanding single shot of him, like, walking around.
Yeah.
And then as he's walking at one point, the camera spins around him. And as it comes to be, like, I think you're facing him.
Mm-hmm.
The camera is facing him, and then it slowly turns around as he's greeting the different ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
And when it turns around and it's behind him, then we're seeing from his viewpoint, we can actually see all the ghosts. And it was all done as a single...
continuous shot, right?
Continuous shot.
Which must have been a huge undertaking.
Yeah, it is.
Because the amount of puppets that they had to, like, kind of swap between and just, like, manipulate all at the same time.
Right.
Granted, like, how much of that do you think was just done in, like, post? Like, because obviously there's, like, the floating specters and, like, colors and swirls and stuff surrounding the ghosts.
They said all the ghosts were CGI.
Yeah.
So in that scene, there's CGI ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
But they still... I feel like they probably still made puppets so that you had a guide.
Oh, no, no. Like, what I mean is that, the puppets were definitely still there, but in order to have, like, you know, like, the effects surrounding them, like, showing that they were spirits, you know, like, kind of, like, particle effects and everything was definitely not in post.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But I'm sure the puppets were actually still there, so... What's crazy is, like, the level of articulation and that, like, all the ghosts, like, they're still just kind of roaming around the town, like, with the way that they died.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there was one that was a housewife where I think her vacuum exploded or something, or she's like, does anyone smell burning?
Yep. Yeah.
One was a pilot that got stuck in a tree, or a parachutist that got stuck
in a tree.
Yeah,
I think, like, her parachute got stuck in the tree and she died somehow. Mm-hmm.
There was a mobster that had his feet covered in concrete.
Oh, yeah.
With fish surrounding. It was like, hey, how you doing?
I forgot about him.
I don't know how the hippie died.
There's so many of them, man.
Yeah.
And later on, after he meets Neil, we see Neil's dog, who's, like, half of him is, like, the middle portion of his missing because he got run over.
Yeah. Which is so gross, but
yeah,
at the same
but
time,
also
but the dog
was hilarious.
Cute.
It was a cute little dog.
Mm. I think it was a Border Terrier or something. I think, like, the same dog that was in There's Something About Mary. It looked like it. They got, like, little beard mustache thingies. Cute.
Okay. But yeah, other things sort of going on in that we want to talk about.
Yeah, do you want to talk about? We kind of got into a little bit of the technical aspects. There were a couple of shots or scenes in particular that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah. So there's three. So when we watched this, we actually watched with the commentary because we're both pretty familiar with the movie.
With subtitles, we're not animals.
Yeah, of course. So we could read what was going on and then listen to them talking at us. So it was, I think, like the director and.
I think it was the either creative head or, like, lead animator or something.
Yeah.
Or maybe, was that the script supervisor? Something like that? I don't know. Anyway, it was, like, I think it was the director and, like, the creative director or something.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And so they were talking, and so there were three scenes that I remember them talking about that I wanted to mention. And so the first one is, like, right in the beginning, there's this scene where Norman is in his house with his parents, and they're kind of berating him. His dad is berating him for... talking about their dead grandmother as though she's still alive, and he's talking to her.
It should be noted that it's his mother in particular.
Yes.
So I don't know if that's making him lash out more, but, like, the dad is very openly kind of dismissive and resentful towards Norman.
Yeah, and I think you're probably onto something there, that there's something significant that it's his mother and not his wife's mother.
Yeah, like... what was it? Like, I think because the dad is... I don't know if it's, like, necessarily just, like, denial. I mean, like, obviously there's some denial in there, but he keeps making, like, a bunch of, like, passive-aggressive comments towards the wife where it's just, like, this wouldn't have happened. Like, maybe he got it from your side of the family or something.
Right.
Like, where he just doesn't want to, like, acknowledge the idea that Norman has this gift and he's not sure where it came from, but is Prendergast, is that the mom's
maiden
name?
That's the mom's brother.
Yeah. So the mom's brother is Uncle Prendergast, who's the kind of drifter that tells, or, like, I think he's just, like, he's not necessarily homeless, he's just kind of, like, they think he's crazy. He just lives in this abandoned mansion up on the top of a hill.
Right.
And contacts Norman about, like, you have to be the one to do this. Like, he, like, conveys the message about what the ghost needs, like, how to tame the ghost, or how to, like, have her just subside for a little while.
Right, exactly. So in that initial scene with the father, it ends up that him and his wife are both... because they're taller, obviously, than Norman.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, their stomachs are about eye level for Norman. But because of the actual size of the puppet of the father, his face would have actually been in the shot if they were standing all at the same level.
Mm-hmm.
Not his whole face, but part of it. Just because he's kind of a shorter puppet. So what they had to do was they had to essentially, like, put him on a box for that shot. And then as Norman walks away in the camera, therefore... widens a bit from that shot, they had to get him off of the box, basically, so that he appears on floor level and where he should be. But in the close-up, he appears tall. He's taller than he normally is.
Yeah, and it should be mentioned that initially, like, he's shown in the house just fixing this light bulb or something. Like, he's got this sort of, like, do-it-yourself or sort of thing. And the mom is, like, she tries to be as compassionate with Norman as possible, but the dad is just having none of it. And his older sister, Courtney, is pretty similar. She just assumes that he's lying or is doing it as a means of getting attention or something. So he's got... It's not the most supportive environment for him, mostly because, for some reason, I guess, like, it must skip a generation. At least it kind of seems like that. Because if it comes from... Or maybe just like maybe it's just like in the lineage for like boys or something in their family, because the uncle both understands what it is, and he's been telling the story to the ghost of Aggie this entire time. Now Norman has to kind of carry the torch
right.
for it. Like he has to, or like it kind of, there's like a pattern that's going on with it where the uncle has been doing this for, we have no idea how long.
Yeah.
But now it's going to Norman, and he ends up breaking the chain by actually talking to the ghost.
Right.
Which nobody
right.
ever thought of doing.
Right, yeah, well, that was the thing, right, like the...
But to be fair, she's terrifying.
Yeah, so. Well, and that was sort of another turn, right, that I forgot about is...
Yeah.
So the Uncle Prendergast...
That name's going to be a nightmare to say.
I know, man. I keep forgetting.
That's okay.
He tells Norman, you have to read from this book at the witch's grave. And when Norman starts reading the book, he's like, this is a fairy tale, this is dumb.
Yeah, it's a bedtime story.
Yeah, it's a bedtime story, exactly. And so that doesn't... It's really weird initially, and then once you finally meet Agatha, you're like, oh,
she's
it's
also
a little
like
girl.
12.
She's 12. You're reading her a bedtime story, so she goes back to sleep and doesn't cause chaos.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get it.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and so it's kind of interesting. So that was the one shot, and then another one that was kind of cool is there's a scene sort of earlier on in the movie. Uncle Prendergast has died. And so his ghost, because he's unfinished business, his ghost comes back to see Norman. And so when he comes, Norman is on the toilet. Not actually, he's hiding in a bathroom.
Yeah.
And so he's on the toilet, and like, I think like the room starts shaking, and there's this weird like zoom out Dutch angle thing that happens. And a thing that they mentioned in the commentary, which is pretty funny, is he's like, yeah, that actually was really hard to pull off because it was actually just a series of lens swaps because they didn't have the zoom out lens necessary to make that shot happen the way it would normally. So I assume it was like zoom out, stop, switch lens, zoom, stop, switch lens, like,
which is crazy.
Yeah,
considering like, well, because like, and it should be mentioned, like at that time when that zoom in, zoom out shot is happening, he's like struggling to get away from the toilet, which appears to be possessed because it's like there's
shaking.
Water burbling out of it. There's toilet paper flying all over the place.
Exactly.
It's very cool to like just kind of. I was also wondering like maybe if because the set itself was so small because in the special features that we looked at, the sets themselves are enormous. They're basically like if you wanted to pretend like you were Godzilla in a model city, it's roughly that size. And
I think
I don't know how big the bathroom one was, but
well, I think most buildings were about like, and now I didn't. Maybe this is two-story buildings, but most buildings seem to be about
like,
knee or thigh height.
Yeah.
Like, so you were pretty big.
But, like, standing up, yeah. Like,
standing
like,
up.
Yeah, naturally.
So, yeah, I don't know how big the bathroom scene would be particularly.
But that would also kind of factor into, like, if they've got a limited amount of range that they want to keep, especially if, they, like, if they're obviously they want to work within the limitations of, like, the storyboard and how much they can, like, they don't have to factor in, like, other outside props or anything affecting the shot. So,
right.
Yeah. The Dutch angle implies tension.
Dutch angle implies... We were watching Tracy, just kept going, Dutch angle. Dutch angle.
Well, it reminded me of Do the Right Thing, because, like, there's a really good scene that involves one of the characters, Radio Raheem, buying batteries at a convenience store.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, he's trying to buy some de-energizers, but the guy behind the counter is, like, he either has, like, a speech impediment or he's, like, foreign or something and he keeps pronouncing it incorrectly. And Radio Raheem is getting really mad. He's like, and it's shot from both a Dutch angle and the lighting is in, like, red and, like, warm colors. And, well, because, like, Radio Raheem, like, he's shown from, like, kind of, like, a tilted left perspective, like, audience left perspective. And then the guy that owns the store is on a tilted right perspective. So, like, it just looks like they're about to have, like, a confrontation about something as minute as just buying batteries. But,
That's funny.
I mean, like, if you haven't seen Do the Right Thing, it's excellent. It incorporates a lot of, like, color theory in it. It's supposed to take place on the hottest day of the summer.
Oh.
And it's all about, like, racial tensions in Brooklyn, which, you know, it's, like, but when it came out, it was great. It's still amazing. It's a very well-done film.
Fair enough.
But, yeah, Dutch Angle.
Dutch Angle.
That's how I know Dutch Angle.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So that one was cool. And then the last one, which I thought was interesting, was at the end of the movie, when Aggie and Norman are talking, when they're speaking, at one point, you can actually, if you look really closely, you can notice that there's a reflection in Norman's eye of Aggie.
That's so crazy.
Which is nuts. I don't know how they did it. Because like the one of them said, like, we had to use some interesting tricks to get that reflection to happen. It was very difficult, especially because their eyes aren't the same size.
And, like, the idea of them going into, like, After Effects or whatever software that they're using to just, like...
Yeah, they did that.
Well, because, like, whenever you look at the stop-motion puppets that they have, they make a series of, like, hundreds of interchangeable heads.
Right.
Because they need them for both, like, syllables, for extremes, for smears, which is what happens with Aggie's ghost in an incredibly well-done climax. They've got, like, animation smears, if you're not familiar with the term, whenever you watch, like, a hand-drawn animated film or, like, animated short or something, if there's a very, like, extreme fast motion, a way that you can cheat that by using fewer frames is by drawing an exaggerated kind of, like, movement of, say, if a character was turning their head, but they wanted to do it, like, a very fast, like, kind of panicky sort of way, you can make drawings of the same multiple head in, like, an exaggerated form all together that will save, like, 6 frames of animation.
Right,
which
exactly.
Which is one. But, yeah, like, they had done that for whenever Aggie is going through, like, some kind of emotional turmoil wherein, like, Norman is basically calling it out as he sees it. Mm-hmm. And she's like, no, that's not true. I'm not a bully. He's like, no, you are a bully because you're doing this stuff. Like, you're no better than they are. And she can't accept that, or she doesn't want to accept it. So she's, like, freaking out and just looking at all the heads that they had made for them.
Yeah.
Because, like, her ghost is, I think the puppet was designed to be semi-translucent because they lit her from the inside.
Right, yeah.
So
they basically lit the inside of the head. So that she would have that sort of ghostly lighting effect.
Yeah.
There's a whole... I mean, we watched a couple of special features as well.
Yeah, do yourself a solid if you haven't seen it. I think most of them are probably on YouTube, or you can just look up pictures of her heads on Google Images. I'm sure that they're on there, or Tumblr or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
They're fantastic. Like, the amount of craftsmanship that went into there is outstanding.
Yeah, yeah. And Aggie was interesting because she actually is a mix of 3 different things to make her... work in the movie.
Yeah, 3 forms of animation.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So there's the stop-motion puppet, which has all, like, the face smear heads and things like this, and the actual, like, physical body.
Mm-hmm.
And
some, like, kind of, like, they're not, like, tendrils or something, it's just, like,
No, tendrils is a good word.
Sure, we'll go with that. Like, tendrils, it's more or less, like, not quite, like, ribbons or, like, something that just kind of looks kind of, like, ethereal.
Right,
and,
well, they cut pieces of paper to look like lightning bolts, and then essentially, like...
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's what it
was. Put those in her head.
Yeah.
To give her that lightning hair aspect.
Yeah, well, it was both lightning bolts and what was it? I think they based the look of it off of, they went to a concept artist and said, we need you to make this look both like ink and like lightning bolts. And, they had another artist that was doing that with hand-drawn animation. So when she comes out of the ground at one point, there's what looks like surging electricity surrounding her.
Right.
And that was hand-drawn.
Right, so that was hand-done.
And then composited afterwards.
Right,
so,
and then there was 3D, there was CGI sort of involved in the whole thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the concept artist who initially did the work, what he did was he literally just dripped ink onto the page and then blew it with a straw.
Yeah.
And that produced sort of that lightning effect, and so they were... The whole attempt of animating Aggie was to reproduce that.
Yeah.
Which they did an excellent job.
It was stellar. Like, it was just... It was so cool. Like, I don't know. And it's weird because when you factor in the amount of detail that they put into these puppets that generally aren't more than about a foot tall... I mean, I think, like, the most extreme is probably, like, I don't know, like, maybe, like, Mitch or one of the Puritans or something. Mitch is Neil's brother, as we mentioned earlier.
Right.
Like, the puppets themselves are, like, they're generally considered pretty small, but not on stop motion, because obviously you have to kind of blow everything up to make sure you have enough control for it. But the extremes and the characters that they go into, the body styles for all these characters, is amazing. Like all the women, or at least in Norman's family, all have crazy huge hips for some reason. Like, Courtney is just, like, ridiculous. Like, her body proportions are so silly.
Right. Well, that was a thing. So that's kind of two things I want to mention there.
Yeah.
So that was... So they brought in a concept art, like, I think they knew...
She was just out of graduation, actually. I think she had just finished school. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They're just like, we like your style so much.
Right, exactly. So they had this idea for this movie, but they wanted a concept... They hired a concept artist to make... To design the characters. And so they saw this woman's style and hired her on because they felt that this was exactly what they wanted. And so that produced these sort of very unique body shapes and character styles, which ultimately lent, you know, fit so well. But then that leads into another thing they talked about in one of the special features is when they were creating this world, they were very careful that there's no, like, straight lines, basically.
Well, everything in the universe is kind of askew, basically.
Right, exactly.
Like, it's supposed to imply, like, there's, like it's all, like, within that universe, there's just, like, a general kind of sense of unrest.
Right.
But, because, like, if everything was just, like, very uniform and weird, it wouldn't feel as organic as it does.
Right, and that's the thing, right? Like, it all almost feels just a little bit off.
Yeah.
Right, but then the characters themselves have these sort of weird, bizarre, some of them bordering on grotesque designs. And so...
Yeah, like, let's, how about the teacher, for example, Mrs. Hensher?
Yes.
Who's so theatrical and so silly. Voiced by Alex Borstein, of all people.
Yep.
Who is also the voice actress for Lois on Family Guy.
Yes.
And she's done, I don't know what else she's done.
She does other voice work, and she also...
She's best known for working with Seth MacFarlane, though, I think. She was
at
also on
point.
Mad TV.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
true. Yeah.
So, yeah, that puppet is not attractive. Puppet is... nasty looking.
Yeah.
But she fits in the world.
Yeah.
But if we were to have these sort of straight lines and things, characters like her, all the characters would look a little out of place. Because they wouldn't fit, because they themselves are kind of awkward and strange.
But there's some kind of beauty in it, though, because, like, there's still, like, some kind of... I mean, it's, like, the characters aren't, like, asymmetrical or, like, weird-looking or anything, but it's just...
Well, they are weird-looking. It's again about sort of that world provides a context in which they feel normal.
Yeah, and especially within the town of Blythe Hollow, based on Salem, Massachusetts. I went to school in Boston, and it's kind of... It's actually pretty spot-on, their kind of commentary about, like, how shameless Salem can be about, like, profiting and making merchandise off of the Salem Witch Trials, which, if you really break it down, is... pretty horrible.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not like, I don't know, it's not like levels of like the Washington Redskins bad, but it's still bad because it's like, we're gonna monetize off of the hangings of these poor Puritan women back in like the late 1600s who were all accused of witchcraft for being different or just like having weird hobbies and stuff. Like, if you actually like go back, or I'm basing a lot of this stuff off of The Crucible, or at least like my kind of understanding of it, wherein that what was it like? I had taken in I think it was like junior year of English or something. We watched a comparison of The Crucible to Mean Girls because there are so many parallels between it.
I have not seen The Crucible, so
you haven't. Oh, do you know like the kind of gist of it?
Nope.
Like, all right, I'll give you the gist. Another like history lesson or whatever, but so The Crucible was a play that was written back in the 50s by Arthur Miller that was a commentary on McCarthyism in politics. So like the whole idea of HUAC, the House of Un-American Activities, that was started by Joseph McCarthy, who was like all about anti-communists. This is right during the center of the Cold War. Arthur Miller released this as a criticism of the way of how McCarthy could basically just kind of arbitrarily assign the term communist to any person that he wanted to, that either like pissed him off or defied him or went against his policies, as a way of both like leveraging himself against them, like as like a more important like political figure that he has the best interests of Americans at heart, and also as a way of destroying their careers.
Right.
Because it's like, it's, you know, like, it's like scapegoating, essentially. It's
right, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, exactly. Normally, it was like, some of them may have been, like, communist sympathizers or something, but, like, he ended up, like, ruining these people's lives.
Yep.
Just because they wouldn't do what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's, I saw a lot of the same things wherein, like, at least the Puritans that are presented in the, in Paranorman, they're not... they're not good people. Like,
no.
They're not at all. I mean, like, they're not necessarily, like, complete monsters, but it's just more the sense of they apparently ended up axing Aggie because they were scared. They didn't know how to handle her.
Right.
And they thought, like, well, it's just be easier for us to kill her.
Like, right.
Which is terrible.
Right, right.
Please don't do that.
Right.
Yeah. Please,
please don't sentence a 12-year-old girl to death.
A public service announcement from Animation Station. Please don't murder 12-year-olds.
Right.
Can't stress that enough. We don't condone child murder.
Yeah, not endorsed by Animation Station.
No, we don't do
that. No, but that's actually interesting. That's actually another thing they mentioned in the commentary is at the end of the movie, so a couple times throughout the movie we see a ghost will sort of peel away, and then...
Well, it peels away their zombie outer essence,
right,
and
well,
you can see
what
their ghosts.
At the end.
Yeah.
Right, but then their ghosts fade. So, earlier in the movie, we have John Goodman's ghost, who starts to peel away in light and then explode in light, because presumably he's gone to a good place.
Mm-hmm.
But the ghosts just fade away. They don't, you know, have this big light heavenly thing. And that was the thing they mentioned in the commentary as well, is because we needed to not do that because otherwise that's letting them off.
Yeah, well, the implication.
Right, they've still done something wrong here, and so we can't
well, they're not,
give
like,
them that.
Because, like, they're not descending into, like, heavenly light or something, like, they're
exactly.
not going up there. It's like, they're probably going to, like, limbo or maybe hell, we don't know, it's not really clear.
Right, they're not clear on that, but the point
is they
kept
it open-ended.
Yeah, they don't get, they're not given a free pass.
Yeah, and
right.
nor should they be, because they
absolutely.
Collectively murdered a 12-year-old girl.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But I wanted to ask you, though, who do you think had the best character arc? I mean, like, aside from, like, Aggie, who obviously, like, learns just, like, you know, like, people will do, like, you can't, like, control people. All you can do is just, like, try to... what do you think the core message of it is? Like, just, like, understanding and, like, acceptance of others and stuff?
Yeah, I think the movie is ultimately endorsing... trying to understand people and trying to approach people on,
yeah, like,
in a kind manner, as opposed to, like, I don't understand you, therefore I'm going to ostracize you.
Yeah, well, and what's weird is that, like, all the characters that kind of focus on being the most judgmental end up getting, like, the worst, like... like, bad things don't necessarily, like, happen to them, but they get the most karma. Which, like, say, like, Mitch, who initially is, like, kind of, like, very wary against Norman and kind of buys into the hype of everyone, just be like, oh, he's weird, like, his car ends up getting totaled. Or Courtney, who was initially just kind of, like, crappy to Norman and was just, like, constantly belittling him and insulting him and completely disregarding him. She ends up having a thing for Mitch, but then it turns out that he has been gay the whole time.
Right, so that's
which is
not,
it's not like, I mean, like, it's not necessarily like a punishment. It's just like, well, yeah, it's karma for you.
Yeah, I suppose.
And they just kind of, like, mention his, like, they mention Mitch's sexuality as, like, complete, like, throwaway kind of gag.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. There was a minor bit of controversy surrounding that, but not really.
Like, yeah, not anything, like...
Yeah. I don't know. Like, not like gay penguins or anything.
I just watched that episode recently.
Did you really?
Yes. Well, and certainly not like the Box Trolls. Like, so Box Trolls was Laika's most recent production, which neither of us saw.
Yeah, we should probably mention that. I'm just going to say, I thought it looked weird.
It just didn't do anything for me. But in the trailers, there was an openly gay couple.
Yeah.
And I guess some Christian groups got real riled up, because of course they did.
because, you know, like, because it's a Tuesday, so sure, why not?
Yeah. So that was a thing, but I don't think Paranorman suffered from that backlash. Because that's the thing with the turn, right?
Well, it's not, like, integral to Mitch's character or anything. It's
right.
completely arbitrarily inserted in there. But, like, admittedly, it was kind of a funny gag, because Courtney is pretty much, like, throwing herself at Mitch the entire time.
Right.
Like, trying to make this, like, grand romantic story behind the two of them. And Mitch, like, he barely even knows what's going on half the time.
I know.
It's like, you're the...
How do you get your deltoids like that? I've never used deltoids in my life. You can test me.
Or, like... What is it? But you're the oldest in the group, not mentally.
Not mentally, yeah, that's right.
But like, Mitch has, like, a very strange kind of awareness about, like, how stupid he is. Which I was like, I don't really know.
What do you mean?
I don't really know how to gauge this. Or, like, I don't like the idea of, like, that he openly acknowledges that, like, he's not, like,
intelligent.
Yeah,
right.
Or, like, the fact that his body is so implausible.
Oh, yeah. He...
like, this gigantic barrel chest and teeny tiny little stick figure.
Man,
like,
hates leg days.
Yeah, he sure does. He hates leg days, and apparently he hates abs. So.
No, because I think he still has abs. He's,
well,
for,
like,
some reason...
Well, it's more the fact of, like, he's built kind of like a bugle upside down. Like,
he's like a Chris Evans. He's a Dorito.
He's a Chris Evans Dorito. No, which actually sounds like a pretty...
That's a joke about Chris Evans. If you look
at... Pretty interesting flavor.
His torso is roughly the same shape as a Dorito.
Oh my god, really? I never thought about that. Oh no, like Kronk. Kronk is built the same way that that Mitch is. Yeah. Kronk from Emperor's New Groove, in case you don't know.
Yes. We've talked
you should,
about it.
Yeah.
We've talked about it.
If you're this far and you haven't seen The Emperor's New Groove, how dare you?
Get on that.
I just want to be outraged about something, man. It's been so long.
I don't know.
I don't get outraged about a lot of things. Like, at the very least, let me be outraged about animation.
Very well.
Anywho.
See Emperor's New Groove.
Yeah, it's so good.
Lest you incur the wrath of Tracy.
Yeah, I will wag so many fingers.
So many wagging tails.
I will be such a happy dog. But if you try to rub my tummy, I'm going to bite you. No, you can't. Like, you can't. That had nothing to do with anything. I'm sorry.
We've gone off the rails.
Yep.
It is that time.
That's true. Oh, man. Yeah, is there any other stuff that we kind of left out? Like, I do like the kind of core message that it sort of has about bullying, and it's not, like, too heavy-handed or anything.
Right. It's one of those things we like where it doesn't talk down to you.
Yeah, because, like, there's that whole, like, I don't know, like, what was it, like, that fad of, like, kid power or something back in the 90s where it's like, yeah, kids rule! And, like, after a certain point, it's like, I like movies like this now that are treating kids with a lot... with a lot more respect and like there's a better understanding where like these problems are legitimate and it's like how do you talk about this because the parents obviously don't know what to do. The dad just kind of chalks it up to Norman just wanting to be weird or trying to like act out. The mom is well-meaning if misinformed. Like she doesn't really know how to handle it because like obviously Robbie was mentioning something earlier about the parenting styles being completely different. So there's no real consistency for Norman to latch onto.
Right, exactly. And the father, I don't know how you characterize the father, but he's generally sort of dismissive of Norman.
Yeah, he's more he's a stereotypical, like, authoritarian, hard-ass dad,
right.
Basically.
Sort of.
Yeah.
At least in the beginning of the film, that's how we see him towards Norman.
Yeah.
And the mom is sort of laissez-faire and,
yeah,
you know, very loose in some ways.
I think she tries to be more, like, sympathetic towards Norman, and it's just like, you know, like, she tries to just be more... open towards the idea of Norman, like maybe he just has like a really vivid imagination or something. She's not overly dismissive, but she doesn't really give it as much credence as she should because then eventually it ends up getting found out that all the stuff he's saying is completely true.
Right.
They're just like, well, why didn't anybody warn us? It's like Norman did. You just didn't listen to him.
Yeah, exactly. So
you end up getting like, and Norman's a pretty sympathetic character. He's a very sweet kid. Like he's
very easily likable.
Yeah, like, and it's you end up feeling like really bad for him because no one really just kind of gives him any credit. Like they just kind of disregard him as much as they can, or because the kind of environment that they live in is just sort of hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Where what is it like? I guess, the adults can just kind of, like, openly dismiss Norman as just being too strange for his own good or something. He's not treated as, like, a precocious know-it-all or anything.
No, he's just a flat-out outcast.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, like, how do you establish, like, sympathy for that when literally everyone else is telling you that you're wrong? I don't know, it's, like, I guess it's, like, do you think it's a major departure between Coraline from this, like, between Coraline and the Box Trolls? Because I don't really know what the... Message behind Box Trolls.
Yeah,
I
haven't watched.
Yeah, sorry guys, we probably won't review that one. It just doesn't really interest me.
Yeah.
Like, for me, it just kind of looked like their version of the Good Dinosaur.
Which neither of us were interested in.
No interest in seeing. All I know is that apparently they get high on fermented fruit and start hallucinating. I'm like, I'm good. Don't need it.
Nope.
Yeah.
I don't know how it syncs with Coraline. I mean,
Coraline
is more sort of about the fact that like.
Coraline's definitely more selfish than Norman is.
Oh, yeah. Coraline's kind of a brat.
Yeah, she is a bit of a brat.
To start. And so her journey is about learning to not be selfish.
Yeah.
And to appreciate, and sort of appreciate the good things in her life.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than lament.
Like, everything
you know,
that she doesn't have, like...
problems.
Yeah, like, we're, like, Coraline is just kind of, like, initially she's just kind of, like, motivated by, like, envy and just, like, wanting to, like... just sort of, like, do her own thing and just, like, I don't know. She doesn't really have a lot of respect for her parents who, like, they just, like, moved. Her parents are obviously overworked and she, like, just needs a lot of attention and stuff to go, like, to sort of entertain herself.
Right, well, she moved away from her friends, so now she's by herself.
Yeah, and she's crappy to YB for, like, no reason. I mean, like, admittedly, he's a little bit of a weirdo, but she, like, is openly just kind of, like, mean to him.
Right.
And I'm just like, eh. But then she realizes that once she gets into the dream world, like, and everything seems better, but it's not really, because it comes at a pretty big cost. Where,
right.
Like, that's how the other mother traps the kids, is by giving them essentially whatever they want, and then she steals their eyes, and then they become ghosts haunting the house, and they can never leave.
Right.
So, does she, like, eat them? Like, I don't know.
You know, I'm not entirely sure. It's not super clear.
Yeah. But either way, she takes their eyes and replaces them with buttons, and it's scary.
Yeah, surprisingly terrifying.
Yeah, oddly enough, children with their eyes hollowed out and replaced by buttons is kind of scary.
Yep.
So, I don't know. I think I like Paranorman a little bit better than Coraline. Coraline genuinely freaked me out, but I like the characters. I don't know. I guess it's kind of comparing, like, apples and oranges sometimes.
Yeah,
because I don't know. And they're very strong movies in their own right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like Paranorman. And plus, it's just fun to throw on Halloween, too. So,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. If you're a horror movie junkie, you can see, like, a lot of homages that they do to things.
Well, yeah, that's one thing they said as well. They pulled from a lot of Sam Raimi movies.
Yeah, you can tell in, like, the way that they kind of, like, lay out shots where they've got, like, this... It's not, like, a jump scare, but it's, like a zoom... like a jump zoom shot or whatever it is of, like, the zombies, like, teeth, like, opening up or something when they open up the door and when they're at Mr. Prendergast's house. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, like, I think it was kind of a trailer shot, but at the same time, because it was shot in 3D. Like, and if you see it in 3D, it is pretty cool.
I'm sure.
Yeah, but it's a very strong movie in its own right, and I would definitely recommend you check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else to talk about?
No, I think that's all.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, thanks, guys. If you have any questions or anything you want us to review, any comments, just want to say hi, whatever, feel free to find us on Twitter. You can find me at TC Trausch. That's on Twitter and Instagram, actually.
Yep.
And where can they find you, Robbie?
As always, lobster_writer on Twitter.
So, yep, thank you very much, guys, and we will talk with you soon.
Yep.
Take care.
Bye.
Actually, can I have you hold this, boo-boo?